This is a special podcast from the World Peace Foundation on the war in Tigray, Ethiopia. It's a recording of a phone call from somewhere in rural Tigray on January 27th, in which Mulugeta Gebrehiwot Behe spoke with me, Alex Duval. Mulugeta was in Mekele in November when the war broke out. He evacuated from the city to the mountains. Mulugeta was a member of the TPLF during the guerrilla war from 1975 to 1991 and served in several senior positions in the EPRDF government from 1991 to 2000. Subsequently, he founded the Institute for Peace and Security Studies at Addis Ababa University and, among other things, initiated the Tana High-Level Forum on Peace and Security in Africa. Mulugeta is the author of Laying the Past to Rest, the EPRDF and the Challenges of Ethiopian State Building, and co-author of a recent paper, Nationalism and Self-Determination in Contemporary Ethiopia, recently reviewed on this blog. Because the quality of the recording is poor, we're also providing a transcript. The recording begins with Mulugeta explaining that the Tigrayan Defense Forces were unprepared for the onslaught, and yet managed to inflict a lot of damage on much larger forces.
And the damage it inflicted on the enemies, it's difficult to express less than a miracle. It was a sort of miracle.
Mm-hmm.
The guy only had 23 battalions and 42 divisions of Eritrea and 12 divisions of Ethiopia were all here.
Yeah.
This is without including the special forces of the Amhara region, which is beyond over 10,000, and also special forces of Oromia, Somalia, and other forces as well. The first month's resistance was with this level of asymmetry. And then the Emirates came. The Emirates effectively disarmed Tigray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they started killing tanks, then howitzers, then fuel, then ammunition. Then they started hunting small vehicles, targeting leadership elements all over. So this created some sort of dislocation. And as part of the weakness of the preparation, so many people moved out of the cities of Tigray towards the rural areas following the army, some including their families.
Yeah.
So we were caught in between, you know. Are we going to defend this people who flocked out of their cities with their families, or are we going to fight? I mean, the army was caught in between. So the organization has to make a decision. You know, it prioritized continuing the resistance, and then it advised many of those who were not in active duty in the resistance to remain in some remote areas.
Yeah.
Which finally resulted in the type of sad news it helped. You know, the result became. They have destroyed Tigray, literally, all of them, EPLF, the Eritrean forces and the Ethiopian forces. They have literally destroyed all the wealth that it accumulated for 30 years. They have burned schools, clinics. They have ransacked each house they moved in. They have started loading the produce of the peasants. It's from all the villages beyond the black road that crosses Tigray towards Eritrea. And they kill whomever they find in El Puerto, whichever village they get in the village I was yesterday, it's a small village, they killed 21 people, out of which 7 of them were priests of that small village.
Yeah.
And that's what they do whenever they go. So they literally destroyed the wealth they accumulated for 30 years in Chigari. And not that is staying at home when this force move all around. And therefore, you can consider the whole Tigrayan pedantry as dislocated. So it's an effective destruction of Tigray,
yeah.
But that's not the only thing. It's also an effective destruction of the Ethiopian Defense Forces. Ethiopia has remained without an army now. You know, our evaluation initially reduced the Ethiopian army by about 85%. 17% of the army were immediately reduced by Abiy because 17% of them were Tigrayans.
Right.
They were pulled out of their ranks, put in camps like the Desa, Wash Arba, Porai, Kurfo, under custody. 17,000 Tigrayans. So that was literally approximately 20%. And this is not only numbers, but it's also a critical part of the army. Mid-level commanders, most of the technicians, and also, you know, skilled people who used to work in artillery, engineering, and all sorts of departments. And they literally lost something like 60% of in this thing. They said the commanders of the Eritrean forces, which they were just seen as cannon fodder. You know, they send them first, and then once they're finished, they start sending their army. So Ethiopia is effectively without an army now. If the Eritrean forces left Tigray.
So tell me, what is the condition of the people? How are people able to? Are you able to eat? Do you have any medical facilities? What are the essentials of life?
No, not much. You know, there has been this locust infestation,
yeah.
And the harvest is also much interrupted because of the war.
Yeah,
it was. As it started at the beginning of the harvest period.
Yeah.
And particularly the Eritrean forces have deliberately burned crops while they are on the ground or while the harvesting is complete, before the harvesting is completed.
Yeah.
So there is this reduction of producers as well.
Yeah.
And our logistics was initially, you know, the logistics that was prepared initially by the government was disrupted.
Mm.
So there are problems. There's problems of supplies,
yeah.
Food, medicine, so on. And hunger among the peasantry is creeping. Little by little, in those remote areas, bordering Eritrea, they are massively ransacked by the Eritrean army.
Yeah.
Whatever produces they had is taken by them.
Yeah.
So it's piling. Soon we might see a serious humanitarian crisis.
Yeah. The government is saying that it controls 85% of the access and that it can provide humanitarian access to the great majority of people. Is that correct, do you think?
Yeah, the great majority of people, yeah. Even the governments, even the humanitarian organizations are estimating the people who need food to around 4.5 million.
Okay.
That's even conservative.
Yeah. And where? And how many of those people can be accessed from the government side? How many of them are in areas that are controlled by Tigray forces?
Literally, people on the towns, on the towns of the mainland, because there is conflict all over. The certain part of people on the southern part of Tigray, around Maïta, Wanlamata, the rest of it is not accessible for humanitarian aid.
Yeah.
Unless some arrangement comes in, some sort of, preliminary agreement to allow humanitarian assistance to move freely has been reached. I don't think the majority of Tigray are accessible to any humanitarian aid that comes through the government.
Yeah. But we are not hearing anything, we have heard nothing from the TPLF leadership about what...
I know. That's a major problem we have. They're just a bit dislocated.
That's
a critical impediment.
As you might have heard today, yesterday, I think the State Department demanded, first of all, the withdrawal of the Eritrean forces, but then also, said there needed to be talks towards a political resolution. But how can talks be How can any talks be conducted under the current circumstances?
Yeah, I think they are in contact through telephone with some people there.
Yeah.
But I really understand why they shy away from coming public and talking publicly. I know there is a limitation of communication.
Yeah.
They have lost their visas. They only have these trials. They didn't bring out any radio transmitter. They brought a television station, which was not possible to run it without having a permanent base. I know that there is this limitation of communication.
Yeah.
But the problem they have is more than that. People are telling them. We hope that they will soon come out and start being public. It's even a problem here in Tigray.
Yeah, because also we are not hearing anything, about any political demands. I mean, what is the agenda? What is the political program? If there were to be negotiations, where would be the starting point? We don't know any of this at the moment.
I know.
So anyway, just the news we get, every day is so desperately sad. And I think many people were shocked, especially by the news about, the deaths of Sium and Abai and Asmalesh. And I think that touched a lot of people around the world. And as you may know, I wrote a tribute to Sium, which was widely circulated, but we still don't know anything about the circumstances. Did you learn anything about how that incident?
They just found them in a village. They were staying in a village, and they didn't have an army. They were just in. In a secluded area.
Yeah.
They caught and killed them. It's APLF that killed them.
Yeah. Yeah. So this story about this story about a shootout, etc., is not.
No, no, no. It's a quantity of rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, the TPLF could have done so many things had they forecasted that the level of violence would be terrible, which was not difficult to forecast. You know, it was very obvious that this war will be a war against Tigray, which Abiy is going to run alongside Isaias.
Yeah.
And once you expect Isaias, you shouldn't expect to come less than any devastating force it could mobilize.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, for those who will not have participated in active resistance in the field on the military side, there were lots of options. You know, moving them to Sudan or somewhere else. So many things could have been done, but there was not preparation as well.
Yeah, it seems there was just a terrible miscalculation. About this, and no political strategy, no communication strategy, no protection strategy. Yeah.
Not at all. Extremely poor.
Yeah.
And people were begging them. They didn't have any receptors here. But people were literally coming up with plans and, you know, asking them to this, to that. But they brought Tigray to their size anyway.
Yeah.
What could they say?
So the mood of the people now, it must be desperate, angry.
Extremely angry. And, you know, they're left with one option, just fighting.
Yeah.
And that's what, and the war is only beginning. It's the same in the urban centers.
Yeah.
And much worse in the rural areas.
Yeah.
Wherever you go, you get dozens of youngsters asking it to be mobilized, to be trained and armed. I mean, the TPLF doesn't have any shortage of manpower when and if it wants to mobilize. So it's anger. And they're left with one option. With that option only. They don't have an option.
Yeah.
They're not even giving them a chance. You know, they're not trying to appease them. They're not trying to get the buy-in of the people. I mean, they're not attempting anything. They're just out there, and it's literally genocide by decree.
Yeah.
Wherever they move him, whomever they find, they kill him or her. Be it an old man, a child, a nursing woman, or anything.
The stories that we've been hearing most recently are especially that it's the Eritreans, but is it everybody, or is it particularly the Eritrean forces?
It's everybody.
Yeah.
But the worst ones are the Eritrean forces.
So tell us, how are you able to remain, you know, abreast of how this is being covered by the rest of the world? Are you able to pick up anything from the, you know, from the news, from the radio, from internet sites or anything?
I have an old radio transistor which I bought it from the militia. That's what connects me with the rest of the world.
So it's back to those old days.
It's extremely difficult. Sometimes the battery gets, you run out of battery and therefore you are out of communication for 2-3 days.
Yeah.
So you... It's difficult.
So what, I mean, you know, we have been doing our best to just draw attention to what's been going on, because, as you know, there was an attempt that to have this war conducted in conditions of total secrecy, and even to pretend that it was not a war. And there was, you know, the US administration, the last one, was very much complicit in that. The African Union was completely failed. But, I mean, the news is now coming up.
Everything is fine. But one thing, I don't know, if you could push more on this humanitarian intervention.
Yep.
There has to be either some sort of monitoring. And we know the Eritrean forces will remain here. And they have they had a meeting last week. It's an information we got from them, and among the senior commanders of the army, and there was a request from some of the army commanders on how long they are going to stay in Tigray. And the response they gave them was, once we leave Tigray, people will not stay for 1 week in Tigray. And therefore, we will leave Tigray to Oyan again, and it will revive. And therefore, we have to remain there up until PP picks it up, which might take several months to come back. That's the answer that they gave them. And therefore, this declaration from the State Department, it might even come later from the UN Security Council, might not force the Eritreans to leave out Tigray. Yeah. Unless it is supported with either with some humanitarian intervention, as much as they did in Kosovo,
yeah.
You know, some armed intervention that reinforces things, or at least some sort of monitoring on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the Emirates? You mentioned the Emirates. Presumably, you meant this was the drones. Yeah.
No, we don't have any targets. We don't have tanks.
Yeah.
We don't have wheels. We don't have big targets. We're just seeing things moving around.
Yeah.
So I think that's the only change that brought it. Otherwise, they have been there in full force, in just full force.
Yeah.
They deployed their drones with their operators, and they're the ones who effectively disarmed us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was one thing that I didn't quite catch earlier on. You said the Eritreans would stay until something had been achieved. What is the Eritrean war aim as you see it?
They don't know when PP will stand on its foot.
Yeah.
To fight against Tigray.
Yeah.
But that's what they're saying. They're saying we have to stay there until PP comes up in a position to fight against the Oyanis. Mm. That's what they're saying.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't know when it happens. It will never happen, actually. The way I see it, it will not happen here. It might not even happen in the rest of Eritrea. We're seeing them in the field. I mean, wherever confronted, you might have heard of a small operation that happened 3 weeks ago in around Dagahari. There was just a full brigade, support brigade of the 33rd division, which was fully mechanized. Support brigade is it's a mechanized support to the rest of the division. You know, it only took 15 minutes to destroy it. Just 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, six 107-millimeter rocket launchers were taken, six 120-millimeter mortars were taken, four 122-wheelers were taken, several vehicles were taken, and 167 of them were taken prisoners in just 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is happening to these prisoners of war? Where are they being kept? How are they being?
We sent them back. We know we cannot carry them around.
Yes.
So what we did was we gave them a sort of political education for 2-3 days.
Yep.
And then we sent them back to Madala and Adigrat.
Okay.
It's it's only the commanders, one colonel and one lieutenant colonel who declined to return back. They say they will kill us, so we will remain with you.
Okay.
Paul Bramwell, you cannot be our soldiers, and that's not what you are asking us. And we cannot provide a shelter, but you can remain in the liberated area. So they're just moving around.
Yeah.
That's where we are, Alex.